Welcome to the Every Day is Saturday podcast, the number one motivation show on the planet.
No more Mondays for you. It's time to make every day Saturday. Boom!
This is the podcast where we help you to accept who you are, not where you are.
On the roller coaster of life, you know we only sit in the front seat, champion. So make sure you are fastened in tight. Let's go!
Tired of feeling run down all the time during the week? We can help you make every day feel like it's a Saturday.
Let's go pack your bags. It's time to leave Averageville.
Introducing the man who thinks abnormal stands for above normal.
When you're on fire, people will travel from miles around to watch you burn, baby. We are fired up.
The host of the Every Day is Saturday show, Sam Crowley.
All right. Welcome back. It's Sam Crowley, host of the number one motivational podcast, 10 years running on iTunes. Welcome to the show. Got a great interview for you today. Joe Fairless. I met Joe. I'm going to bring him out in just a second. I met Joe. I didn't even know he was in my backyard here in the great Buckeye State, Cincinnati, Ohio. We met for coffee a couple months ago, and I found Joe intriguing, and I thought, wow, wouldn't he make a great podcast guest? We're going to talk about the lifestyle of an entrepreneur, how to stay inspired and motivated, and probably some money-making tips as well. Joe's a very successful real estate investor and has an amazing podcast, The Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever. I love that title because it's just so in your face and arrogant. Joe, are you with me?
I'm with you, baby. I appreciate that. And by the way, 10 years running, you were doing this before anybody had an iPhone, right? Like this is crazy. I was just listening to a podcast and they're saying how only 17% of people listen to podcasts. And I'm thinking, man, 10 years ago, you're like one of the grandfathers of this stuff.
Yeah, dude, you know what? I couldn't even go to college for 10 weeks, and yet I find myself 10 years now with a podcast. I have not a commitment gene in me, and yet I find myself doing this now for 10 years. It shows when you finally love what you do, right?
Yeah.
That you just stay with it and have fun. If it wasn't fun, I would never do it, though. I mean, because you meet interesting people like yourself, and we'll talk about your show and what you do, but I think that's cool, isn't it? Like, being an entrepreneur is – I don't know about you. I guess I'll ask you because you're the guest. But but for me, it's just like I could never have 2 days be the same. That would drive me up a freaking wall, you know? And what about you? Like, what's your entrepreneurial life like? I mean, are you doing it for the same reason, or why are you doing what you're doing, you know, being a real estate investor?
Well, no 2 days are the same, that's for sure. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Well, I was completely apathetic towards what I used to be doing, and I wasn't until I just came to a point in time where I was like, okay, I'm done with this. And my background is that I'm from Texas originally, went to Texas Tech University, and then graduated from there and went straight to New York City. So I went from cows and cotton to skyscrapers and pavement, and it was a crazy transition. But I wanted to compete with the best of the best in advertising. I was an advertising major, so I was working on Madison Avenue right out of college.
Yeah,
at a really nice ad agency, which basically means that I wasn't making any money because. Right. Because it was a really good company, so I didn't make anything. I was making less than minimum wage, and so I climbed the corporate ladder, became the youngest VP of a New York City advertising agency, but then I realized that it wasn't my thing anymore. I'm a huge personal development fan, and I wasn't fulfilled, and I wasn't contributing in a meaningful way. So I started. Sampling life experiences is what I like to say, where I was teaching a real estate investing class because after I was in advertising for a while, I started to save some money and I kept my lifestyle the same while I climbed the corporate ladder. So my friends would make fun of me. They'd say, you're living like a college kid and you're 8 years out of college. But I, you know, they also weren't buying homes in Texas. You know, they, and I started teaching a class to tell people how to do that. It was called how to be financially independent while keeping your full-time job. So I started doing that, and you know, after a while, I realized that now I want to do more of the investing and less of the, you know, talking to clients about their Facebook strategy. I mean, it just didn't. Yeah. I didn't care, and so I just evolved and kind of got into real estate investing.
That's pretty wild, dude. I mean, what's it take to be a real estate investor? I mean, you need money, right? I mean, you see these courses. I think a lot of us have either bought them, thought about buying them, or bought them and then put them out in the goodwill, you know, 3 years later. But how do you get your first property? You know, you need money. Did you use your own money or parents' money or friends or other people's? How'd you get going?
Well, I got my first property when I was working in advertising. So I used my own money. In fact, I used my own money for the first four properties. So my approach was pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. I saved up my money and I put on my first house, I put a 20% down payment. It was $76,000. It was about $20,000 all in on my end when you factor in the closing costs. In my second house, it was 10% down because I did it through a unique program called a Home Path loan program, which no longer exists. The third was I bought all cash, but then I did a cash out refinance shortly thereafter, and I got literally all my money back out, and I am making about $300 a month on it. The reason why I was able to do that is because I bought it at such a low purchase price, and I just found it on the MLS through my real estate agent. But this was in 2011 when there were a lot of good properties on the MLS for pretty cheap. Mm-hmm. And then my fourth, I bought the most creative until I got into the big stuff. The fourth I bought with a personal line of credit. I had a personal line of credit from American Airlines Credit Union for $40,000. I was approved for $40,000. Wow. At 7% interest rate. And I came across a wholesaler who for anyone not familiar with real estate, basically they go find motivated sellers. They say, I'll put your place under contract and find the buyer. And so they emailed the property out to their database. I got it. I bought it for $35,000 and then put $5,000 into it for improvements, which yeah, as a side note, I ended up having to put $10,000 more into it, which I didn't anticipate out of my own pocket. But
that yeah, always happens.
Okay. That always happens, yeah.
Did you flip that, did you say, or what'd you do
with it? I ended up keeping it for a while until I sold it when I got a pretty good offer to make about $15,000, $20,000. I think it was $15,000 more than what I bought it for. So now what I do, and so for anyone wanting to get started and doesn't have any money, yeah, I've interviewed almost 700 people on my podcast, and I've been doing real estate investing for you know, relatively good amount of time. You can, but you have to. It's likely you're going to have to do wholesaling, because you can be a wholesaler and just go door to door and try and find motivated sellers, post on Craigslist, and then be basically your matchmaker, finding the motivated seller and then finding a buyer who wants to pay all cash and making a spread.
Okay, that sounds like it sucks, though. Is that not?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never done it.
I mean, that's how you get business as a wholesaler, knocking on doors. Are you serious?
Well, if you have no money.
Yeah. What if you had a little bit of money?
If you have a little bit of money, then you could do direct mail. You could do you could go to I mean, Craigslist is a really good resource. Internet marketing, you know, search engine stuff, SEO.
Yeah, let me ask you about Craigslist real quick. When you get on Craigslist and you're looking at people, I'm looking at it from, like, let's say I got a line of credit, let's say for $30,000, or I can get my hands on $30,000. Mm-hmm. And I go to Craigslist. Are those the people you're saying that have the ads out there, like, you know, I'm trying to think of those signs on the side of the road. You know,
we buy ugly houses.
Yeah, or they're selling them as well, and I can buy. Is that where I would find maybe a house to buy for $30,000? Or
Yeah, yeah, you definitely could. I
investor specials. That's the one.
Yeah, investor special. Yep. Yeah, those are the people. Those are wholesalers.
And how again, do you know? And how do you know you got yourself? I mean, I know you got to do your due diligence, but what are some of the, like, if you wanted to get into that game and go spend $30,000 on a house, and you think the after repair value, or you could flip it and make a few grand? What do you got to ask? What kind of questions you got to ask so you don't get taken to the cleaners?
Well, I'd say you need to know three basic questions. One is, how much is it? How much do I purchase it for? So that's one. Two is, how much will it cost to get it moving ready? And then three, what is it worth? Actually, I'm going to go four. Four is, what is it rent for? Once you know those four questions, then you'll be able to evaluate it. But the key is to get really good information on those four questions. Mm-hmm. Because if you know how much you'll rent for, and you know how much it's your purchase price is, then you can easily determine how much you can get in rent, or how much you'll profit. And a down and dirty rule is a 1% rule. If you make at least, if your rent is at least 1% of the purchase price, assuming that the property is move-in ready or close to it, then you'll make a little bit of money. All my properties are about 1.5% of the purchase price. And if you get to 2%, sometimes you'll hear the 2% rule, then you're cash flowing like crazy. But you've really got to take a hard look at the property in the area, because it's probably not in a good area, or there's probably something up with it. So that's just kind of a common sense way to look at it.
Interesting. You know, speaking of first homes, I bought my first duplex with a credit card. I don't know if I told you that when we met for coffee.
I think you did. Yeah, that's creative.
Stupid. But, well, you know what's funny is I refied it in 6 months. So it was a 0% interest Discover card, and they send you – this was in 2002, though, when they were just giving away money. I mean, yep. Just sign your name and here you go. So it was $20,000, bought a dilapidated duplex. I wrote myself the check for that much, 0%. And I knew I just had to refi it within that 12 months and I would be okay, which I did. And then kind of went off from there and bought a whole – see, I was the guy who actually went to all those boot camps and bought all the Carlton Cheat CDs and actually used them, though. You know, so that was really interesting. I find real estate very calculable. Like, you can get hurt, no doubt about it. I mean, I'm sure you've got some really war stories about, you know, not so good things that happen. But real estate, at least I find it's calculable enough, and you can say, okay, this is what the rent's going to be. This is what my expenses are going to be. This is my mortgage, taxes, insurance, all that. And here's what I got left over. I mean, is it that simple, or is it more complicated than that?
It's that simple. The challenge is to make sure you're using the right numbers, and to make sure that you have the right team in place, so the management in place to implement the business model that you're envisioning. Because you and I and everyone listening can make the numbers work on a spreadsheet. We just delete a zero, right?
Right.
It's pretty easy to do that. But in reality, are you using the numbers, and are you getting the right data? And do you have the right people on the ground who can implement it based on how you're running your numbers? Those are the two keys. Mm. And that goes with single families. And, you know, my most recent transaction, I bought a 320 unit for $26.6 million. I take that same approach, you know, with the big stuff. Do you have the right team, and are you using the right numbers?
Wow, dude, that's amazing. So now you're not just doing onesie twosie deals anymore. I mean, $26 million? What in the... How do you – okay, let's just break that down. Take me through the process of you getting access to $26 million.
Well, 7.5 of it is what we needed to close on the deal, and then the rest was financed from a lender. So it's really access to 7.5, and my business model now – so we started out talking single-family homes. But I don't do that anymore. I don't buy single family homes. I've never wholesaled. I was just going off of what I've heard from people I've interviewed, my friends. What I do is I buy apartment communities with investors, and we share in the profits. So It's also called a multifamily syndication. How I was able to get to 7.5 in this scenario is the team. So I personally raised over $1 million. My business partner raised over $1 million. And then we partnered up with a group that raised the difference. And together, we're owners of this deal with our investors. So from a high level, I'll stay fairly high level. From a high level, there's limited partnership and a general partnership of a deal like this. Mm-hmm. The general partnership would be the people like me who are implementing the business model, raising the money. And the limited partnership would be people who are passively investing in the deal. So they're saying, here's $100,000. I don't want to do any work on this. Just send me my quarterly check. That's it. And we're good with that, and they're good with that because we know how to make it happen, and they just want their quarterly distribution. So when we look at these larger deals, that's how I do it. I have a business partner, and we just raise the money, and we find accredited investors, and we share in the profits with them.
Wow, man, that's like when you had told me a little bit about that. We met at Panera and had a cup of coffee and got to know each other a little bit because we have a mutual friend and we both have a podcast and things like that. But when you were telling me that story earlier, just kind of clicked with me just now. I mean, that's an amazing ability. Let me ask you a question. Is it easy? I don't want to say the word easy. Tell me about the difficulty level. If you don't have money, what are some of the key characteristics that you need kind of as a person and also maybe skill sets you need in business to be able to raise money if you have none yourself, but you want to get in on deals like even not $26 million, let's say a $260,000, you know, 4-unit in, mm-hmm. you know, somewhere mid-America?
The skill sets required are for you to either have real estate experience or a successful business or entrepreneurial background, because ultimately you're going to be in sales and marketing. And first and foremost, they're going to be buying and investing in you. And in order for them to buy and invest in you before they even look at a deal, they've got to know that you're reliable, that you have a successful track record in doing whatever the heck you were previously focused on. And I'm a living, breathing example of that because I bought 4 single family homes, just 4, only 4.
Yeah.
And then I went from that to a 168 unit apartment building where I raised over $1 million to
buy. Where was that? Was that in your local community? Or
yep, that's here in Cincinnati.
Okay.
Yep, in Cincinnati. So I was living in New York City at the time. I lived there for 10 years and it was in Cincinnati. So I wasn't even in the same city I was living in. So in order to do that, in order to raise $1 million for a business, because we don't even need to be talking real estate specific. This is for anyone who's wanting to raise money on a new venture, right? For anyone to raise money on a new venture, you've got to have a successful track record for people to believe in you. Plus, you got to know what the heck you're talking about.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to talk the talk, and you have to be able to be a student of the game. And what I did is I'm a big time reader. I love reading books. And I read a bunch of books and I reached out to the authors of those books and I'd get to know them. Most of them didn't actually reply back to me, I'll be honest. Some of them did.
Yeah.
And then I would bring on people to consult me. I'd pay them. I'd pay them money and they'd consult me. And I'd learn the business, and then I'd essentially – the third thing you need – so one is some sort of successful track record in business or real estate. Two is you've got to have the actual network of people. And if the crazy thing is I didn't think that I had the network of people to raise a million. And in fact, I wasn't even looking for something where I'd raise a million. I was looking for something where I'd raise about $200,000.
Yeah.
And I thought I could do it. I wasn't sure, but I thought I could do it. Well, turns out I came across this deal, and I thought initially I'd need to raise 400. I was like, well, shoot, I thought I could raise two. I guess I can raise four. And then the deal changed again. I need to raise a million. And I was like, well, I'm already in this. I might as well just keep trying. And I ended up having an investor who was initially in at 100,000. He ended up investing over 300,000, and that pushed me over the top to what I needed to be. So you've got to know the people, and you've got to have what I like to do when you're looking at raising money is looking at all the different networks you're a part of.
Yeah.
So for the first deal, it was advertising agency people. It was a guy I met only on my flag football team, and he invested $25,000. I mean, we only knew each other from flag football.
Wow.
It was two of my roommates, one from college and one from – well, both from college, one high school friend and one college friend. It was two people on the Texas Tech Alumni Advisory Board. I was on the board not knowing that I'd ever go into real estate and raising money, but I was just on the board to help Texas Tech students. And through those relationships, once I changed my job, I was able to raise money. So those are the two things. And the third, so one is you got to have the network. Two is you got to have some sort of track record. But three, you got to be the expert. And when you surround yourself with the right people, you can leverage their experience.
Wow, man, so these people that you started raising money from, they were in your network. You probably never even gave. I mean, the guy on your softball team and people from Texas Tech. I'm certain. I don't want to put words in your mouth. You didn't look at these people initially with dollar signs on their forehead, but as you start to do what it is that you do for a living, you start thinking, who do I know?
Yep.
Would they be interested in what I got going on? And I guess the lesson I just took from what you talked about is if you don't ask, you're never going to get anything, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I still don't look at it with dollar signs in my eyes when I meet people, because I know intuitively, I've always known that it's not about that. It's about just building a friendship and seeing what I can do to help them out. And when you meet me in person now, I don't talk about my business unless someone continually asks me questions.
Yeah.
I just don't.
Yeah.
I just want to get to know them and see what I can do to help them out.
Yeah.
That's just my approach.
That's awesome, man. So I'm listening to you, and the listeners are tuning in to Joe as well. And by the way, I want to talk about Joe. Just launched a book on Amazon. I want to make sure I give him a plug on that, because that's pretty awesome. The best real estate investing advice ever. I want to make sure that we talk about the book, and people can go to Amazon and search Joe's name, F-A-I-R-L-E-S-S, Joe Fairless. Check out his book as well. And Joe, I'm thinking right now you're in the land of milk and honey, man. I'm thinking you wake up on a bed of $100 bills and somebody comes in and actually feeds you. And you really don't do much anymore, because that's the life of an entrepreneur. Is that pretty accurate?
You forgot that someone fans me too.
Yes.
24/7. Yeah, massages my feet whenever I snap my fingers.
Yes, sir. So that's what you got going on now. Ultra successful.
So there's no down days. Yeah. Not quite, actually. But it's on my vision board.
Good.
Now, my day-to-day looks like, so I make money in three ways. One is the large apartment buildings. So I, as we talked about, I raise money from investors and we buy apartments together and we share in the profits. So the main way is through that. That's a big splash whenever I close on a deal, and I've closed on, I control $54 million worth of real estate right now as we speak. And we're about to put another property under contract that will increase it about $13 million. I got a 250 unit, a 155 unit, a 168 unit, and a 320 unit, plus three single family homes.
So let me ask you just one question. Outside of the three single family, all of those units that you're describing, do you have any day-to-day responsibilities with those as far as managing or anybody reporting to you or anything like that?
Day-to-day, no. Weekly, yes. My responsibilities for those apartment communities is to be the asset manager. So I manage the property manager. Basically, I manage the manager. So I'm not on site, you know, talking to residents or repairing anything or nothing like that. I'm meeting with the property management company every week and reviewing the numbers and reporting back to my investors once a month.
Okay. Okay. I just wanted to kind of gain clarity, like how much do you have in that day-to-day responsibility? So, okay, back to the land of milk and honey where you have,
yeah.
You have no stress and everything's awesome.
And then the second way I make money is I have consulting clients. And by the way, you're going to notice that all of this ties into buying apartments with investors and sharing in the profits. So I have the second way is I have consulting clients where I teach them how to buy apartments from investors or with investors and share in the profits. So I teach them the whole process and I work with them side by side. And I charge a fee for that. And so that's the second way I make money. And the third way is through my podcast. I have not been doing it 10 years, but I can't wait to be able to announce that I have.
Just say it. Doesn't matter if it's true.
But it is. Yeah. Well, is that what you're doing?
No, yeah, man. Yeah, I just started a few months ago.
Yeah, well, I'm going to do 20 then. I've been doing my podcast for 35 years.
Well, you 30, might get caught I'm up 30, in the sense yeah. that it's only been around for about 11, but go ahead. Say 30.
I'm 34 years old, but I've been doing it for 35 years. Now, but it is the world's longest running daily real estate investing podcast.
There you go, man.
That's legit, baby.
Legit.
That's legit.
Yes.
Yep. I have almost 700 episodes now, and I make money from advertising sponsors from that. So those are the three ways that I primarily make money. This the book that you mentioned.
Yes.
I'm donating all the profits from the sale of that book to Junior Achievement of Cincinnati. So it's all the profits from it are going to help underserved kids in communities to teach them financial literacy skills.
What's the main gist of the book in the sense that I get a feel for who you are and what you do? You're going to teach people how to invest. Is it something that somebody who does not have 1 minute of investing experience can read and gain some knowledge on how to get going with it?
Yeah, that's how we structure it. So it's really simple. The book is it's like an appetizer, a sampling for an appetizer, where you've got a sampling tray for an appetizer, final phrasing, where you've got a lot of different things you can taste and see what you like best. And how it's structured is it's 29 chapters. It's like 200 pages, 29 chapters.
Yep.
And each chapter is focused on a conversation that I had with a guest from my podcast.
Oh, cool.
And we talk about not only the insights from that conversation, but also actionable steps you can take to implement the advice. So, for example, we talk about how to go from single family properties to multifamily. So if you have a little bit of experience, you want to get into the bigger stuff, there's a case study and there's an inspirational story on that. We talk about how to have go to financial independence on a 5-step process. And it's not some you know, hyperbole. That's a real thing that happened with this best, I call them best ever guests, this best ever guest. And we outline the process and we give action steps. We talk about kind of, you know, you and I were talking about wholesaling earlier. We talk about how to wholesale probate properties and find them because one of my guests was focused on that. So it runs the gamut from if you want to get approved for a loan on a multifamily property, talk about that. So it's really a sampling of all different types of real estate investing. And then giving you action steps for getting going.
Yeah, that's great. You know, that's really ingenious then to have the thought of the guests on there and use them for the chapters and their advice. That's very cool. I like podcasting for that reason alone. There's just so many different episodes. You could like literally take a podcast and turn it into a book, turn it into a course that you want to sell. Because these are really just thoughts that you're getting out in your mind. I love the fact you call it the best real estate investing advice ever. Why'd you call it that? How'd you come up with that name? I mean, I love it, but
yeah,
I mean, that's pretty
it's
bold,
straight.
Dude.
It's so straightforward. And the number one thing I wanted is for people to understand what the podcast is all about. I didn't want any ambiguity.
No, there isn't any of that.
There's nothing, none of that, right? No. Like I wanted them to know we're going to be talking about real estate investing advice, and it's not just any advice.
No.
It's the best ever advice. Yeah. And you're right about the podcast, man, being able to repurpose that stuff.
Yeah.
So this book that just released is – Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever, Volume 1. And it's only on the first 100 episodes of my podcast. Mm. So guess what?
Yeah.
In 6 months, I got Volume 2 coming out. We're already writing it.
Wow.
And that's going to be on episodes 101 through 200.
Yeah.
And so I've already got six books with the content for six books already done. Now it's just a matter of we got to write it and get waiver releases and all that good stuff.
Yeah, but you're right, man. Like my book, One More Breath, was simply a gathering of all my Facebook posts that was chronicled our daughter when she was born, you know, at 1 pound, mm-hmm. all the way through her coming home. Same thing. You know, I made sure I went back and went through every single Facebook post that, you know, tracked that and made that the book with some editorial comments. So putting together content, it's not difficult. It does require a little bit of discipline, but I think you would agree, man. It doesn't. None of this you should ever do unless you're really just excited to do it. Because there's a chance and a pretty good one for a while. You ain't gonna make a dime, but you'll love doing it. And at some point, like your monetization of your podcast, I'm sure when you got involved and you started doing your podcast, you first thought, "I'm not gonna, you know, I don't make a dime with a sponsor," but you kept doing it, and now. Do you mind me asking? And you don't have to share the number. But
share whatever. You ask me anything, I'll share.
What kind of revenue you drive from sponsorships of your show?
Yeah, now I get about $5,000 a month.
Damn. That's awesome.
And before, so my first sponsor, this is for anyone thinking about a podcast, starting a podcast, this is going to be a good story for you. Or if you have one and you're trying to monetize it, same thing. I started in September of 2014, I believe, and I wasn't doing it daily. I was doing it sporadically.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm seeing my numbers jump and up and down, up and down. I'm like, I don't know if this is what I don't know what benefit. I don't know if anyone's listening, first off.
Right.
And I don't know if I'm – like what benefit this is doing. I mean, sure. Yeah, I'm enjoying meeting these people. I'd done like 10, 15 episodes, but I'm not sure from a business standpoint what value I'm getting from this, because, you know, time's really important for everyone. And what I did, I was like, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do my podcast daily for the rest of the calendar year. So that would have been October, November, and December of 2014. I'm going to do it for 3 months, and then I'm going to take a step back. I'm going to see if it was a good use of my time. However I define that, you know, depending, you know, maybe I get a relationship, maybe I, you know, have a sponsor or something. Well, in December of 2014, I'd been reaching out to different people who had already been on the show. That's one key to find sponsors. Find people who have already been on the show and reach out to them, because mm-hmm. they know what's going on. And I got my first sponsor for $2,500 to sponsor 1 month, which was January of 2015.
Were you kind of gripping, you know, crapping your pants?
Thinking, oh,
how am I going to add any value, $2,500, to this person?
You know? Yeah, yeah. I had I made sure I consider myself to be the most resourceful person on the face of this earth. If there's something that
there
has
you go
to happen,
again.
I'm incredibly resourceful.
Yes.
I'm honest about my weaknesses,
yeah.
But my main strength is I can get things done.
Love it.
I can patch things together, and so I made sure that we drove enough business to them during that month, and it was my primary focus so that I could use them as a case study, and we did.
Nice.
So I was able to do that. And then after that, I had the case study. And then shortly after, I got a sponsor who sponsored it for like, I think about that amount. But now I'm at the point where I'm blocking 3 months. There's a minimum 3 month commitment that they have to do. And it's $5,000, $4,500 to $5,000 a month.
Wow, dude. Congratulations.
But,
I love hearing those types of success stories, especially as it relates to podcasting.
I also have to mention, though, I have expenses with the podcast,
yeah,
because that's important. And my expenses are about $3,000.
Because you outsource the editing of it and the show notes and things?
I outsource everything,
okay,
except for the actual interview. When I started, I was doing everything. I was doing the editing. I was finding the guests. I was doing the show notes, I was posting it to Libsyn, I was emailing the guests, letting them know it went live, I was posting on social media. I don't do any of that now. I only interview, and because of that, there's some costs. I pay someone $900 to find the guests for me, and again, it's a daily podcast, so they have to constantly be finding guests. I pay them $900 a month. I pay the editor $38 an episode to edit the podcast, and I have a team member who does social media and stuff, but they're more like an intern. So, but it's close to $3,000 when you factor in the hosting fees and things like that.
Yeah, but it keeps the finely tuned engine going, though. You know.
Oh yeah, and those are fixed costs. The podcast editor I pay per episode, but I know how many days in a month there are. There's not going to be a month with 80 days. So I have fixed costs, and as my listenership grows, I get more revenue, but my costs remain very, very flat.
Yeah. Yeah, that's ingenious, man. I like that. I love the monetization of anything, but especially podcasting being near and dear to my heart. Joe, let's wrap it up. Best real estate investing advice ever. It's Joe's podcast. If you're thinking about real estate investing or you have an interest in that, listen to Joe's show, download it from iTunes. Joe, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you online? Your website or a special landing page or how?
Yeah. If anyone, well, there's a couple ways. One, you can just Google my name, Joe Fairless, and my website will come up. For anyone interested in real estate investing, then you can go to my website and you get a free chapter of my book and get a sense of what that looks like. Just go to my website, which is joefairless.com, and click the book tab, and you'll see a place where you can just opt in to get a free chapter of my book and test drive the book. And if you have any questions about podcast monetization or anything like that, I'd be happy to talk to you and help you out. I mean, if you're a friend of Sam's, then you're a friend of mine. Or if you're a listener of Sam's and you're a listener, I'd be happy to help you out. So just email me info@joefairless.com.
It's awesome. Thanks, Joe. After listening to your story, I'm going to start calling you Joe Fearless.
Boom. I love
it. I'm sure I'm the only person that's ever said
ever.
That
yeah. First person ever. Yeah.
thank you for that. Cause I really consider myself a highly intelligent, and I can come up with quick witted stuff like that off the top of my head.
So, you're a rare bird.
I am, man. I am. So you can take that and you can use that if you want to on a future show, if you need to, something like that. Just, you don't even need to give me credit, man. Don't even give me credit. So, hey, let's do this again. Cause I think the whole entrepreneurial journey is awesome. I think the whole roller coaster ride is incredible. If you don't really have, and maybe you can share your thoughts, but kind of the last thought on this show, I mean, if you don't have a strong stomach lining and you kind of wilt like a flower in the hot sun when you get a little bit of adversity come your way, I don't know, man. I just don't think the entrepreneur game is going to work out too well for you. But if you're somebody that really finds joy in and love and sharing your unique message. Just do it, man. Do it. The money will follow. I mean, true, Joe?
True, true. Agreed.
You know, would you add to that at all? I mean, it's just...
Yeah, if you got a weak mindset, then fix it. You have to. And if you are doing something, and I sincerely think that if your approach is people first, my mantra is the secret to living is giving. If you approach that with that mentality, then, and you know how you're going to monetize your business, because one thing, if you know, I want to give things to people all the time, and if you don't have a business model in mind behind that, then I mean, you just need to have some more business sense and figure it out. But if you know what your business model is and you are giving first, then you're going to do well.
Yeah, I can attest for Joe, because I've talked to him a few times now, both on the phone, on Skype, and in person. And each time we talk, he asks and leads with, you know, how are you? What can I help you with? And you know, my mind is always geared towards being the negative person. Sometimes Joe's going to have to give him a check at some point. He's actually trying to get some money from me in a roundabout way. Joe, that's just confession. This is Confession Thursday. So I'm just going to share that with you. But no, it is true, because I find myself, Joe needs a spreadsheet. He wants to look at my properties and give me advice. That's awesome. I mean, why wouldn't I do that? And you're right, because when people come from that approach to giving, how can I help somebody out? Guys like me recognize that, and we're like, you know, let me try to help Joe with what's going on too. And I think that is just a great way. I mean, a really, really good way. And it's got to be authentic though, because you know, you go to events and people are like, tell me about you. How can I help you? And you're like, dude, you're not.
Shut up.
Right. Go away, man. Seriously. Yeah. You just read a book, and that's what they told you to say. You know? So, but with other people, you can tell it's authentic, because you're busy, man. I know you're busy. So you take time out to do this interview, to take time out to grab a coffee and to help me out with what's going on with my own real estate portfolio. So Joe is speaking from a place of advice, and he walks it, man. So Joe, I know you got to go, and we got to wrap it up. I'm going to tell everybody, head on over to Joe's podcast, The Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever. Check him out. What was the email again, Joe? Info@JoeFairless.com. JoeFairless.com. Joe, it's been a pleasure, man. Thanks so much for your time today.
Sweet. Thanks, Sam.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Every Day is Saturday podcast. Still fired up and want more of Sam Crowley? Be sure to visit everydayissaturday.com. And don't forget to follow Sam on Twitter @SamCrowley. Let Sam know you're listening. Use #EveryDayIsSaturday.